Jesus awake. good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, okay, good. Welcome to this class on perceptions. Mirror, mirror on the wall, may have sucked you in. So hopefully you will get what you came for. My name is Chris Gonzalez. I teach marriage and family therapy at Lipscomb University. And my partner in crime...
Hi, I'm Walter Serdacki, and I teach youth and family ministry and spiritual formation at Lipscomb University. And we're excited to have you here this morning to share with you some work that we have been doing. If you haven't yet, get a chance to just text my name to 37607, and then your answer to, you know, what do you think of when you think of teenagers? We would love to kind of get some of your responses on this as we get started. Chris, why don't you start us with a prayer, and
sure.
Then we'll dive into it.
Heavenly Father, God, Spirit, Son, we are grateful for this life that you've given to us and the opportunity to live an abundant life. We're grateful for the people that you've put in our lives, the adolescents and the teenagers that all of us have a connection to, either in our families or in our churches or in schools or wherever it is that we engage them. And as we explore what it is like being a teenager relating to adults, I ask that you give us great wisdom and great courage and great humility as we get the privilege of engaging with these beautiful images of God who are seeking to figure out what that means and who they are. And I pray that this class today will help illuminate what those relationships are like and try to crawl inside the minds and hearts of teenagers a little bit and help inform how we can do even better work than we're doing now with them. We ask you guide these next 45 minutes. We pray in Jesus' name.
Amen. Well, like I said, I teach youth ministry at Lipscomb. Chris teaches psychology. We are both highly, highly interested in adolescence. We're both parents of adolescents. Any parents of adolescents in the room? Great. How many of you are youth ministers? Got a bunch of youth, fantastic. Any elders or deacons? Anyone? Anyone in the wrong class here? Anyone? Like, I am not. Wait, I thought this was N.T. Wright. So thankful we're not up against N.T. Wright. We should have prayed for that. Both of our careers have been highly invested in adolescents. Chris did his doctoral work on positive youth development. I've been doing 20 years of youth ministry. And so we love teenagers. And so we came up with some really interesting questions that we want to share with you. But what I want to do before, as we start, is to just for a moment try to put yourselves in the shoes of a 15-year-old. All right? I'm sorry. Yeah. We'll lay hands on you in a minute. But imagine waking up in the morning being a 15-year-old. What are the messages you get from mom or dad at the breakfast table before you head out to school? You're imagining. This is rhetorical. Thanks for the enthusiasm, though. Now you get to school. What are the images or the stories and the messages you're getting from your teachers? Or your coaches? Or you go to work after school, what are the messages you're getting from your boss? Or you turn on the TV, what are the messages perhaps you get as you surf the internet about what it means to be a teenager? And now as you crawl into your bed and get into the fetal position and go to sleep, that's part of what we want to look at. What are the messages that our students are hearing from the world around them?
Kind of drawing from narrative psychology and the way that we understand our lives, the way that adults understand their lives the way that teenagers, anyone understands their lives, as we're presented in our lives with thousands and thousands, millions of facts, and we cannot possibly use all of that information. And so we start to connect the dots, and we select the dots that we think make sense, and it turns into a story, it turns into a narrative that's ripe with meaning. And over time, unless there's some sort of intervention or cause, and we all do this, we highlight some things and that counts as truth, and we obscure other things, or they're obscured and they're hard to get at and they're not counted at all. And a story develops, and the story has characters in it, and they have roles, and they have scripts, and they go about. And so, in a sense, there's a lot that happens in our lives, but there's only a selected amount of things that we count as being real. And so these dots get connected, and these narratives get drawn, and these stories go about, and over time we start to believe that these stories are true, because this evidence counts and that evidence doesn't. We live storied lives. In our relationships with each other, there are stories that guide our behaviors and our thoughts and our feelings and our spirit through our life, beliefs about ourselves and each other.
So the purpose of our study was to look at this relationship between adults and adolescents and ask adolescents, what do you think adults think of adolescents? We did a sample of 120 middle adolescent students, ages 14 to 21 years of age. They were at a camp that Lipscomb University hosts. We put ads up all around the campus that kids could text into. But what we wanted to really get was a sample of typical youth group Church of Christ students. We wanted to see what they had to say.
And so we asked them four questions. What do adults think of you? What was the second question?
Sure. It's what do you wish
yes.
that adults knew about teenagers? Where do you think...
Let's
just get that out of the way right now.
Where do you think adults get their information about teens?
And then what is it that adults can do to get to know teens better? So, like we said, our method of collection was through the internet. Kids could access it through their cell phones. And so the first question we asked was, what do teenagers think adults believe about teens? And we looked at all the responses, and we did a thematic analysis of these. This was a qualitative analysis. We had 120 respondents. And as you know, when it comes to qualitative analysis, that is a tremendously huge pool of data.
In all of the qualitative analysis you've done, you probably haven't had a sample of 100. I'm just kidding. Who does qualitative analysis? Yeah.
So we got four themes out of the kind of the buckets of answers that we got. That teens think that adults believe that teens are immature, that they are they lack virtue, they have a diminished mental ability, and there's a relational distance between them. Let's unpack each one of these four themes. First, they said that, you know, when we think about adults, they think we're immature. So let's hear from some of our students. A 17-year-old male said teenagers believe that adults think that they're immature, not able to make good decisions on their own. Adults think we don't know anything and that we're immature, that we aren't capable of doing things on our own. Teenagers are young, they're inexperienced, however, they have a special fire in them that sometimes adults lack that can drive them to do great things. And I think a lot of teenagers think adults just look down on teenagers because they haven't reached the same level of maturity as them. And finally, teenagers are just a law-breaking, adult-hating free spirit. While enforcing the rules, it becomes easy to look condescending and disrespectful to those below you.
The next theme that we saw with this first question was that teens saw adults seeing teens as lacking virtue. And in their own words, 14-year-old female, we are stupid, disgusting, rude, and only care about ourselves. 18-year-old male, adults think of teens as old children. They don't think we can handle the responsibilities that adults can. They think we're only concerned with ourselves and we'll do whatever we want. And then kind of they turn, like, break the floor. Like, we aren't all hood rats. We had to look that one up.
Thanks, Urban Dictionary.
Yeah. A lot of us are much more responsible than some adults. That we are lazy and lack the drive to turn the country around economically, male 17-year-old Republican. Another male 17-year-old said, I believe some adults put teens in a stereotype that consists of laziness, partying, and disrespectful behavior. However, I believe if you show an adult respect, they will respect you. 14-year-old male, that they all have attitudes, all think the same, and they are rule breakers. They think I should be perfect. 17-year-old female, that we are irresponsible and don't care about our futures.
I just want to take a quick pause here and just remind you of our sample. These are students who are pretty much actively involved in a youth ministry, and they're at a Bible camp for the week. The next thing that came up was that they think adults think that teens lack mental ability, that they're not intelligent. Adults believe that teens are less knowledgeable about most things relating to life. For the most part, they probably think teens are terrible people as far as doing stupid things that will ruin our future. I believe that adults think we're irresponsible and just unable to think straight. And I think adults think of teens as a confused generation who do not know their way. Teens do not know what to do with their life or who to worship as their savior. And finally, we see, you know, we have to ask to go to the bathroom. And then we're expected to change the world.
Bravo.
The fourth theme that we saw emerge repeatedly was that teens notice there is a significant relational distance between adults and teens. And a couple, in their own words here, 19-year-old male, the irresponsible can't be trusted, that we're selfish and immature, that we're so immersed in technology that it will destroy our relationships and ruin society. And I don't really disagree with that last statement. 15-year-old female, that we're spoiled brats that are rude and selfish, and that we can't be trusted to do anything on our own. 17-year-old male, I believe some adults put teens in stereotypes consisting of laziness, partying, and disrespectful behavior. However, I believe if you show an adult respect, they will respect you.
So now that we've heard some of their voices, just want to kind of take a step to pause for a moment. And when Chris and I went through this data, I vividly remember it was about a year ago, almost to the day, we're sitting at a Panera coding all this data. And I don't know about you, I mean, there are some of those that are kind of funny, but when we look a little deeper at them, it's sad. And so we looked at some of the qualitative data that we got, and when we were coding them, how many of those responses were either positive, neutral, or negative? And out of the 120 responses that we got, 81% of them said that they were, those were negative responses. And another 12% were we coded as neutral. Didn't necessarily mean positive or negative. It was just this kind of the way I see things. So what almost 93% of the responses to the question, what do you think adults think of teens, were negative. So then Chris and I were like, well, maybe these are students who have an axe to grind. Maybe they just don't have really great relationships with their adults out there. So one of the other qualitative or quantitative questions we asked were, how many positive relationships do you have with adults? And so the green ones you'll see here, 5 to 6 and 11 and up, are students who are self-reporting, hey, I've got plenty of great relationships with adults. Even if you had the 3 to 4%, we're talking almost 90% of our pool are saying, I've got great relationships with adults. Now, this 90% here would make sense if only 20% of our pool said, I don't have that many, you know, I've got a few great relationships with adults. But these are people who are saying, I've got great relationships with adults. So they don't have an axe to grind necessarily when it comes to this issue. So we want to take a pause just for a moment, have you get into groups of 2 or 3, and just maybe go back to your the exercise we started with when you were envisioning being a 15-year-old student and those messages that you have. But now that you've heard some of the messages and some of the themes, step into the confessional, if you will. I was raised Catholic, so I'm going to pull out old, good old Catholic guilt here.
It's not the wardrobe and you're not going to Narnia.
No, no, sorry. This is, you know, forgive me, Father, I have sinned. It has been 18 years since my last confession. When you think about the context that you find yourself in, maybe you find yourself at a PTA meeting or homeowners meetings or in an elders meeting or in Bible class with other adults. How have either you have engaged in some of those messaging about students or to students themselves? So this is a safe place here. We'll edit this off the recording. But turn to 2 or 3 people, take about 2 minutes and say, yeah, here's some of the times when I can think of those messages, either contributing to them or being in a context where that has been happening. On your marks, get set, go. 2 or 3 groups.
Yeah,
I think you're doing great. Take about 15 more seconds, no rush. So let's come back together. Love to hear from a couple of your groups. Now, the messages that we heard, do some of those ring true? Have you participated in them? Have you been in places where you've heard that happen? So, for example, about two spring breaks ago, I was bored, so I went to our HOA association meeting. I mean, I was really bored. And to hear them talk about the teenagers in our neighborhood echoed a lot of this stuff. And then I came back from that meeting and I asked my wife, you know, I told her about that. She's like, oh, that's just like being around the teachers in the teacher's lounge. So talk about teenagers. How about you? Confession time. Any times you've heard that or even participated?
And if you don't want to say your name, you can say...
someone in our group.
Chucky or Susan from Loma Linda.
All right. I was just going to say, I pick up my kids at the parking lot of a shopping center, and the security guard is going around saying, you cannot wait to be picked up here. Why? Because kids are smoking pot and they're fighting. And even the parents, we couldn't even sit there. So we went to the management to talk to them, and that's what they're saying. The kids are shoplifting. It was all negative.
Yeah.
So we don't want kids hanging out in the parking lot to get picked up or whatever. So we moved to another place.
Yeah.
I was struck a few months ago in going over. I was doing Byron Katie's The Work, doing a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet for my teenagers. And as I've gone through that process, I cannot imagine what it's like to live life from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, constantly hearing how you can do better. I can do better. It's not that they don't get nuggets of praise, but I mean, they're hearing a message from the parents, teachers, everybody. Not that it's not necessary, but as an adult, if I had was hearing that all the time, if I could always do better, you know, so.
Yeah, there's really interesting research out there that says, you know, if you've got a report card that comes back with four A's and a B, what are your parents going to talk to you about? Yeah, instead of how great you got such wonderful grades. One more? Yeah.
I mean, we have leadership meetings for our student ministry in San Jose, and it's a lot of negative messaging coming from the volunteers that we hope invest in the kids.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get them to invest more and more, maybe because of some of that mentality towards them.
Excellent. Yeah.
Well, I'm a teenager, so I might have biased opinions.
Good.
I think, in my opinion, I have a lot more responsibility than most teenagers. I work 5 days a week, and I also do school on the side. My mom, she still treats me like a little kid, and she tries to go to other people, and a lot of these other people tell her, like, I don't want to talk to you about it. If you want to talk to him, go talk to him yourself. You don't have to go through me. But, so I feel she doesn't trust me enough, and that kind of annoys me because I've been doing it for about a year now, and it's been pretty steady.
You've been responsible, you go to work, you take care, you're doing
what you need to keep a job for a whole year.
Yeah, that's huge. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing. One more, last one.
I kind of mentioned in our class, in our group, that teenagers are getting these negative messages from us. But we were concerned that if teenagers were actually asked about the groups of adults that they are associated with, those three or four or five up to 11 or more adults, would their perceptions of adults' opinions be the same as of a general?
That's a question we have about this data.
And the other thing I would point out is my experience is that in a corporate or governmental area, adults are subject to the same thing. You can have an office that's at the top peak professional
the hierarchical
level,
structure.
And yet management might continually bombard you with, you're not doing well enough, you're not doing enough, you need to do more, whatever. And you get bombarded with negative messages all the time, even though your office might be shown to be a very good one.
Now think about this. Think about all of these negative ideas, negative thoughts, negative expressions. And what if instead of adolescence they were applied to another group, a religion, gender, ethnic group? What would we call that?
prejudice,
sexism, racism,
discrimination,
yeah,
teenism,
yeah. And for some reason, we have some emerging and developing ways in the cultural flow to push back against some of these isms, but there isn't so much pushback on this one.
Pretty much politically disenfranchised,
right.
Though. I mean, they don't have much power.
And really,
right.
No other time in history, this is really one of those times when we see children aren't valued as part of the culture like they have been for centuries, because cultures generally recognize we have to invest in this this demographic because they are truly our future. Chris, you have several demographics.
So we have some hypotheses as we're thinking through. We're trying to answer the question, why is it so negative? You know, your comment here kind of leads in to what we're trying to figure out. So one idea was that there's a cultural narrative that overrides personal experiences. We asked this question, and there's a story about how adolescents and adults relate to each other, and they were answering on that level rather perhaps than personal experiences that they've had. Maybe. Another hypothesis, in the relationship research that's been done, there is a 5-to-1 ratio of interactions that, this comes out of marriage research, but it's really relationship research in general. In couples, there has to be a minimum of 5 positives to each negative interaction to be balanced. 5-to-1. Ideally, in the healthiest marriages, it's 20 or more to 1. Now, that ratio generalizes to any relationship. Another hypothesis, in brain research, in the neuroscience, the part of the brain that's responding to emotion, processing emotions, has a much more intense response to negative experiences than it does positive experiences. The negative experiences will imprint more quickly, and positive experiences have to be attended to and savored and nurtured to get the same impact. The evolutionary psychologist would talk a lot about how that has helped us survive as a species. And it may be that adolescents are treated poorly. And now, the way I look at these hypotheses is I kind of want to scoop them all together and say it's not going to be just one of these, but some kind of a salad mix of all of them together.
All right, so let's turn the corner, all right? Let's see what they said about, well, what do you wish adults knew? If you had a room full of adults, what do you wish that they would know? And one of the first things they said is, I wish adults knew that we do have value, that they would recognize the value we have. You know, we're more than capable of doing great things, even though people don't think we are. That teens have an insight into this world and its cultures and are capable of making good decisions and creating new ideas. And that we want to make a difference. We can't stand complacency and tradition for the sake of traditions. The church should be much more fluid and active in the community than it is. And we want to do good in the world. And a lot of us are much more responsible than some adults.
Adolescents want adults to know that they have it tougher these days than the adults did back in their days. I wish they could know what it's like being a teenager in our times, as a 16-year-old female. 14-year-old male says, it isn't easy being me. We're very afraid of what everyone else thinks, and it's not just like quick that someone can get over that if they ever do. Our culture is so judgmental, and it ain't easy.
You know, to say to my daughters, you know, when I was your age, is impossible because it's a completely different time. Or to say to an adolescent, these are the best years of your life. they're going to say, if these are the best years of my life, then I'm forgetting. I mean, think about just the pressure that social media places upon a student's life. My daughter will put up a photo on Instagram, wait 20 minutes, see if it gets the prerequisite number of likes, and if it doesn't, she'll pull that down to avoid further embarrassment. So what has happened is popularity now is measurable by a number. I don't know what that number is. It's random.
I put up an Instagram photo one time, and my son said, "That's a really good picture. You only have 12 likes." And I didn't know what he, like, was I supposed to have more? He's like, "Your friends aren't really great friends." I got 12. I was feeling pretty good.
But he was showing you compassion. Yeah. They're saying, look, we need you, adults. We have a student who says, there's so much peer pressure, so many temptations and problems going on in each person's life, more than they probably think. And students have become very sophisticated adapters to be able to put on that facade that they see perhaps many adults put on Sunday after Sunday or day after day that says, everything's okay, I've got it all together. I wish they would know what it's like being a teenager in our time, and that we just want someone to invest in us and believe in us and trust us to do great things. And we can do so much more if we're believed in.
Another theme that emerged from this is adolescents want, they actually want to be observed being imperfect. They don't want to be judged for that. They want the safety of adults, but they don't want the judgment of adults. And say, let us screw it up. Let us make that mistake. And hopefully that you'll be there for us. Teens need to experiment to find out who they are rather than parents telling them who they should be. Teenagers wish adults knew that there's more to them than their actions or mistakes, and that they are incredibly important to the future of the church. And then we found some teens with some nuance and some kind of sophistication in the way that they were saying, you know, adults have these negative thoughts about us, and frankly, they're right, but only partly right. Like, not all of us are that way. Some of us are. So it's kind of a yes, but cut us some slack a little bit. Some of us actually do care, even though there are few some do. That we're pretty cool when you get to know us. Not all of us are crazy savages. I'm a pretty chill guy, and the old ladies at church love me. So I guess it's working out, says a very suave 16-year-old male.
The third major question we asked is, where do you think adults get their ideas of teens? And it would be what you would imagine. Media like television and movies, the internet and social media were some of the top ones. The adult's own experience as a teen. So those were the top three. And then the last one came in dead last was their actual experiences with teenagers. So what they're saying is, and I think this is a question worth really diving into, is, you know, most of what adults are getting about teens is from a distance. It's distant observation. It's not actual interaction with teenagers. And so when we think about our faith communities, you know, what percentage of our time is actually devoted being together? I would think on the average in most churches, and I'm going to be conservative here, 80% to 85% of a student's time at church is spent with merely other peers. Maybe there's 10, maybe 20%. Think about your context and your teenager's experience there.
What can adults do to better understand teenagers is our fourth open-ended question that we asked. And the first thing that teens wanted adults to do is just spend time with us. You know, we hear there's this whole story about quality time, and that's really important. they're also just wanting quantity time, just some time with us.
They said there's going to be this awkwardness. We recognize that. It's your job as adults to get past that awkwardness, kind of push through the barrier. They're expecting, in some ways, us to make that that initiative. Yeah.
One thing I've noticed, because I'm a teenager, is my parents, they tell me, oh, you play too many video games. And this was the same way with my brother. He bought a computer, spent all his time upstairs playing video games. They told him, you never spend time with the family. And this is what he replied. He said, every time I spend time with the family, all you tell me is what I do wrong. Mm. So why am I going to spend time with the family?
That's really good. Really good information. The other thing is, they said, just learn about us. Get some better information than you're getting. You know, teenagers want adults to enter their world, get to know some of the things that they're interested in, their language, be familiar with some of the their youth culture. So, for example, an 18-year-old said, try to connect better. No pop culture references. Really get to know the teens. Teens won't come out of their shell to old people. That was in quotes, which is translated, you guys. Sorry, not my words. Who don't understand them. Adults have to be relatable for the teens to allow them to understand them. And then lastly, a 15-year-old female said, adults just need to take the time to get to know teens. Every teenager is different and deserves to be treated that way. If you're an adult, want an idea of teen behavior, just say, take some time to talk to them and get to know who they really are.
So some conclusions that we're coming to from this is that there's a messaging problem and an interpretation problem in the relationships and the way there's the communication going between adolescents and teens. And we need to kind of grasp that and own that and not be passive about it.
Yeah, and perhaps we need to stop stereotyping teenagers or do less of that.
And students did report that adults are wanted and needed in their lives. Students do not desire complete autonomy. Here's the story I think that a lot of adults believe is they just want to be on their own, completely separated and cut off. And that is not the case. That's not what they're telling us in these measures. We want connection, but in large measure we want a different kind of connection than we currently have.
Well, I'd love for my parents to tell me decisions and stuff.
Yeah.
But when I go to ask them a question, they don't give me a specific answer. What they'll tell me is, oh, that's a dumb idea. Mm. And then they'll be quiet. Mm. So I'm like, why should I ask for your help if you're not going to give me an answer? Even if it's not an answer I like, right. I'd rather have an answer.
Give me some data to work with.
Than something that tells me my idea is dumb.
Sounds like they're not doing the follow-up by explaining why it's a dumb idea. And you might want to say, okay, why is it a dumb idea? It seems like there's a breakdown with they're giving you the conclusion without giving you
right.
the reasoning, instead of giving you the reasoning and then telling you you might need a better idea.
Yeah, because think about the way we've developed adolescents. Adolescents live in a no man's land between childhood and adulthood. There's times where we expect them or treat them like children, and then there's times when they're acting like children and we're expecting them to act like an adult. And they get a multiple of messages instead of seeing, okay, adolescence is a time of preparation for adulthood. How do we get them ready for adulthood? And if we're treating them like children or being helicopters, as some of the responses suggest, we're not giving them the opportunity to be imperfect or even value them by letting them use their gifts or talents.
Okay, so what? So what do we do with this? Where do we go? How do we use this information and do it better? We've got how do adults in general engage with teens? What are some ideas? What are some ideas for youth workers? And what are some ideas for churches in general?
Yeah, so the first thing for you guys is for the next 24 hours, just try to look at the world through the eyes of a teenager. Listen to the messages whenever something is in reference to an adolescent. Is it a positive, neutral, or negative? And maybe even we need to become those people that speak up and say, wait. Let's stop here. Because again, if we were talking about a person of color or a person who was Muslim or a person who was fill in the blank of a, you know, of a group, we wouldn't let that stand necessarily. So let us become advocates in the next 24 hours. The second thing is, with the students in your churches, just say hi to the students. Learn how to say hi. So turn to the person next to you or in front of you or behind you who you don't know. Look for someone you don't know in front of you or behind you. Say hi to them.
Hi.
Oh, yes, you're doing great.
You're gifted greeters. This is good. This is good. If you,
here we go. You can do this. I mean, imagine walking through the halls of your church building, and adult after adult after adult passing. I'm invisible. I don't matter. I'm not part of this community. Sorry.
And in the advanced class of the greeting is, hi, Ryan. Mm. Hi,
yeah.
Cheryl. Hi. Yeah. So when they know that you know their name, it's difficult to for them to come to the conclusion that they're invisible.
So Chris and I are in a life group together. You know, my kids are friends with his kids. And here's the way this has changed the way Chris and I interact, or I interact with Chris. I'll be talking with Chris after class or before worship or after Wednesday night or whatever. And Kanan or Sierra will come up. And I will inevitably just stop that because I love Chris, but I'm going to say, hi, Kanan, how are you doing? Look him in the eye. Hi, Sierra, how was your week today? And recognize and acknowledge that they are there.
And Kanan will go, hi.
It's awkward sometimes. Yeah. I'm not gonna.
But he's not invisible.
Right. We've got to learn how to listen. And I think, what's your name?
Ryan.
You know, I think some of Ryan's points that he's been making can apply in a variety of situations with coaches, teachers, those kinds of things. I want to show you a quick clip from Cornell West from 60 Minutes a couple weeks ago about how he listens.
Be as passionate a listener as he is a speaker. Watch him here in South Carolina sharing the stage with conservative Robert George, or in class with his students at Union Theological Seminary in New York. Rather than needing to lead every important conversation, Cornell West prefers to be a part of them.
I think human history, for the most part, has been a cycle of hatred and revenge and indifference and callousness to the weak and vulnerable. But we're experiencing an awakening. That's what happens in America. Right when America's about to go under, you get a spiritual and moral awakening.
From your mouth to God's ear.
Bring teens into your small groups to hear their voices. So part of this is creating a space where the space is incomplete if they're not there. This is something we've tried a couple of times in our life group, and it's been really neat, and the teens were really receptive to that and shared really well. Creating that space, not where they've come into the adult space and are awkwardly wedged in, but that space is meant for everybody to be.
In the life of your church calendar, built in intentional seasons of connection. Yes, there's times when teenagers need to be with other teenagers. As Kara Powell puts it, sometimes you need to be able to talk about masturbation without grandma being in the room. It makes sense to me. But you know, sometimes we need to talk about sanctification with grandma in the room.
Yeah.
Or forgiveness with mom and dad in the room. Or think about what we miss out not hearing their voices. When all we hear is from our own peers as well. So I'm not saying, hey, let's just fire all the youth ministers. You're welcome. But we're saying, hey, let's just take some breaks every once in a while from teens being over here, adults being over there, and never the two shall meet. Let's intentionally mix it up. Maybe have some hybrid classes where you say, let's just mix it all up. We're not going to have teen class and adult class. Here's five different classes. Everyone pick from one.
Train adults how to interact with teens. You know, part of being a youth worker, as you know, it's all systemic. There's really no such thing as a youth minister, right? Because the youth are in families, and that's all interconnected. Part of the work is just some basic how to engage a teen training that really can go a long, long way.
Yeah, I remember teaching a parenting class and a parent going, you know what? This is an intimidating place to come into in the youth room. And so we've got to just teach them how to say hi. Youth workers teach a class with a teen, maybe. You know the old, I do, you watch, I do, you help, you do, I watch, and then I go do something else and you do it all by yourself. Engage students in some of that. Also, this is something I was guilty of, is having youth Sunday, right? Let's give the youth group one Sunday and we'll let them preach and lead singing and all that. And it's a wonderful thing, but I think some of what happens there is now, it's like, okay, thank you, that was cute. Let's bring back the A team and move on. I think there might be some damage we're doing to that.
In the diversity literature, that's called tokenism.
Yeah. So let's hear from you guys. If you don't mind, I know we're a little late, but I don't think there's a class coming in right after, so we're happy to stick around. But one or two more minutes, we'd love to hear from you, implications of what this information might look for church, youth workers, parents, teachers, coaches, those kinds of things.
I got a question.
Yeah.
You know, as far as hedging them and not letting them make mistakes, so as a parent, would it be let him be late?
Yes.
Just wait.
Yes. There is homework my daughter hasn't turned in. It frustrates the snot out of me. The worst thing that I have is access to her grades. And I just have to bite my tongue and bite my tongue and bite my tongue. I'm like, okay, she might get a D this semester. Is she going to die? D doesn't stand for death. You know, C doesn't stand for corrupt. I don't know. You know, it's okay. It's okay. I'm standing before you as a person who got a D in economics, married to an economics teacher, because I never went to class. I found out there was this connection between going to class and the grade I got. And I learned that the hard way by having to retake those credits. Other implications?
Yeah. Isn't there a point, though, where you're supposed to do correction? So, I mean, do we just let them, I mean, letting them fall on their face is fine. But,
they've got to make the mistake first. So many parents interject before the mistake happens. Not every mistake is catastrophic. But we've been treating so many smaller mistakes as being catastrophic mistakes.
And the manner in which, because the teens didn't say, let me make my own mistakes and suffer in my own consequences all by myself, isolated, alone, and withering on the vine. What they said is, let us make mistakes, but we also want you engaged. But as don't lead with judgment, lead with maybe nurture, or engagement. So I think inside of that, I think correction encased within nurture feels better than correction alone, with no encasement.
Maybe ask them what they did wrong first before we tell them they
did wrong. Or what happened? What happened? don't even go very neutral. Well, what happened here? Let's do two more comments and we'll be done.
Along those same lines, if you intervene before they fail in every instance, there's always going to be that like sneaking suspicion in the back of their head that their only reason for success is you. If you don't give them the chance to fail, then they can't personally claim success as their own efforts. Mm. You know, it's, you have to let them have the opportunity to make mistakes, so that then it's also their work that has achieved and their work that has given them success.
This is my own confession. My biggest problem with that is identifying my own failure as enmeshed with their failure. If they fail, what kind of parent am I?
Yes.
What kind of marriage and family therapist parent am I, right? One last comment. We'll close here.
Yeah, I just recently had a conversation with a teen. We created a kind of cardboard testimonial video to support the suicide walk. We're going to be participating in San Francisco next month. And the words she uses were darkness and myself. And obviously that kind of jumped out to everybody who saw the video beforehand. And I met with her and pretty much the reason she gave me and came out of her mouth was, I just wanted attention to see it work because you're meeting with me now. So, I don't know, it's just, there was multiplicity of other things she said, but it just jumped out at me that that's the kind of attention that teens need from adults that perhaps at least she's not getting, but desperately wants.
You had your hand up. I want to hear from you.
Well, I made some big mistakes as a teenager. I was in an abusive relationship, and my parents, you know, they warned me again, you know, be careful, guard your heart and everything. And then once I got out of that relationship, they were kind of like, well, you know, we told you so.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't any help after that. And I felt there wasn't any help from anybody at my church or anything like that. I had to heal myself on my own because they told me, you know, they told you so. What are you going to do? So, I mean, there has to be, you know, both sides of it. You told me not to make the mistake. I made the mistake. Help me clean up.
Right. Yeah, and that's exactly what we're saying is, it's our job is to come alongside after the mistake and teach, correct, learn, love, encourage, whatever is necessary. We will stick around here. We thank you so much for your ideas and your presence and your engagement. Feel free to email us too, any questions. It's our first dot last name at lipscomb.edu if you want to email us. Thank you.